he asked. There was no answer. Who the hell told you to do it?
God darn it. We didn't do nothing. We was just gonna dance.
No, you wasn't, Jules said. You was gonna sock that kid. Tom said, Mr. Houston, just when these here fellas moved in, somebody give a whistle.
Yep, I know. The cops come right to the gate.
He turned back.
We ain't gonna hurt you. Now who told you to come bust up our dance?
He waited for a reply.
You're our own folks, Houston said sadly. You belong with us. How'd you happen to come?
We know all about it, he added.
Well, goddammit, a fella got to eat.
Well, who sent you? Who paid you to come?
We ain't been paid.
And you ain't gonna be. No fight, no pay, ain't that right?
One of the pinioned men said,
Do what you want. We ain't gonna tell nothing.
Houston's head sank down for a moment, and then he said softly,
Okay, don't tell. But look a-here.
Don't knife your own folks.
We're trying to get along, having fun and keeping order. Don't tear all that down. Just think about it. You're just harming yourself.
All right, boys, put 'em over the back fence, and don't hurt 'em. They don't know what they're doing.
The squad moved slowly toward the rear of the camp, and Houston looked after them. Jules said,
Let's just take one good kick at 'em.
No, you don't, Willie cried. I said we wouldn't.
Just one nice little kick, Jewel pleaded. Just loft him over the fence.
No, sir,
Willie insisted.
Listen, you, he said. We're letting you off this time, but you take back the word. If and ever this here happens again, we'll just naturally kick the hell out of whoever comes. We'll bust every bone in their body. Now you tell your boys that. Houston says you're our kind of folks.
Maybe.
I'd hate to think it.
They neared the fence. Two of the seated guards stood up and moved over.
Got some fellas going home early, said Willie.
The three men climbed over the fence and disappeared into the darkness. And the squad moved quickly back toward the dance floor. And the music of old Dan Tucker skirled and whined from the string band. Over near the office, the men still squatted and talked, and the shrill music came to them. Pa said,
They's change a-comin'. I don't know what. Maybe we won't live to see her, but she's a-comin'. They's a restless feelin'. Fella can't figure nothin' out. He's so nervous.
And Black Hat lifted his head up again, and the light fell on his bristly whiskers. He gathered some little rocks from the ground and shot them like marbles with his thumb.
I don't know. She's a-comin' all right, like you say. Fella told me what happened in Akron, Ohio. Rubber companies. They got mountain people in 'cause they'd work cheap, and these here mountain people up and joined the union. Well, sir, hell just popped. All them storekeepers and legioners and people like that, they get drilling and yelling red, and they're gonna run the union right out of Akron. Preachers get a-preaching about it, and papers a-yowling, and they's pickhandles put out by the rubber companies, and they're a-buying gas. Jesus, you'd think them mountain boys was regular devils.
He stopped and found some more rocks to shoot.
Well, sir, it was last March. And one Sunday, 5,000 of them mountain men had a turkey shoot outside of town. 5,000 of 'em just marched through town with their rifles. And they had their turkey shoot, and then they marched back. And that's all they done. Well, sir, they ain't been no trouble since then.
These here citizens' committees give back the pickhandles, and the storekeepers keep their stores, and nobody been clubbed nor tarred and feathered, and nobody been killed.
There was a long silence, and then Black Hat said,
They're getting pretty mean out here. Burn that camp and beat up folks. I've been thinking. All our folks got guns. I've been thinking, maybe we ought to get up a turkey shooting club.
and have meetings every Sunday." The men looked up at him, and then down at the ground, and their feet moved restlessly, and they shifted their weight from one leg to the other. Chapter 25. The spring is beautiful in California. Valleys in which the fruit blossoms are fragrant pink and white waters in a shallow sea. Then the first tendrils of the grapes, swelling from the old gnarled vines, cascade down to cover the trunks. The full green hills are round and soft as breasts, and on the level vegetable lands are the mile-long rows of pale green lettuce and the spindly little cauliflowers, the gray-green unearthly artichoke plants. And then the leaves break out on the trees, and the petals drop from the fruit trees and carpet the earth with pink and white. The centers of the blossoms swell and grow in color, cherries and apples, peaches and pears, figs which close the flower in the fruit. All California quickens with produce, and the fruit grows heavy, and the limbs bend gradually under the fruit, so that little crutches must be placed under them to support the weight. Behind the fruitfulness are men of understanding and knowledge and skill, men who experiment with seed, endlessly developing the techniques for greater crops of plants whose roots will resist the million enemies of the earth, the molds, the insects, the rusts, the blights. These men work carefully and endlessly to perfect the seed, the roots. And there are the men of chemistry who spray the trees against pests, who sulfur the grapes, who cut out disease and rots, mildews and sicknesses, doctors of preventive medicine, men at the borders who look for fruit flies, for Japanese beetle, men who quarantine the sick trees and root them out and burn them, men of knowledge. The men who graft the young trees, the little vines, are the cleverest of all, for theirs is a surgeon's job, as tender and delicate, and these men must have surgeons' hands and surgeons' hearts to slit the bark, to place the grafts, to bind the wounds and cover them from the air. These are great men. Along the rows, the cultivators move, tearing the spring grass and turning it under to make a fertile earth, breaking the ground to hold the water up near the surface, ridging the ground in little pools for the irrigation, destroying the weed roots that may drink the water away from the trees. And all the time the fruit swells and the flowers break out in long clusters on the vines. And in the growing year the warmth grows and the leaves turn dark green. The prunes lengthen like little green birds' eggs, and the limbs sag down against the crutches under the weight. And the hard little pears take shape, and the beginning of the fuzz comes out on the peaches. Grape blossoms shed their tiny petals, and the hard little beads become green buttons, and the buttons grow heavy. The men who work in the fields, the owners of the little orchards, watch and calculate. The year is heavy with produce, and men are proud, for of their knowledge they can make the year heavy. They have transformed the world with their knowledge. The short, lean wheat has been made big and productive. Little sour apples have grown large and sweet, and that old grape that grew among the trees and fed the birds its tiny fruit has mothered 1,000 varieties, red and black, green and pale pink, purple and yellow, and each variety with its own flavor. The men who work in the experimental farms have made new fruits, nectarines and 40 kinds of plums, walnuts with paper shells, and always they work, selecting, grafting, changing, driving themselves, driving the earth to produce. And first, the cherries ripen, 1¢ a pound. Hell, we can't pick 'em for that. Black cherries and red cherries, full and sweet,
and the birds eat half of each cherry, and the yellow jackets buzz into the holes the birds made, and on the ground the seeds drop and dry, with black shreds hanging from them. The purple prunes soften and sweeten. My God, we can't pick them and dry and sulfur them. We can't pay wages, no matter what wages. And the purple prunes carpet the ground, and first the skins wrinkle a little, and swarms of flies come to feast, and the valley is filled with the odor of sweet decay. The meat turns dark, and the crop shrivels on the ground. And the pears grow yellow and soft. $5 a ton. $5 for 40 50-pound boxes. Trees pruned and sprayed. Orchards cultivated. Pick the fruit. Put it in boxes. Load the trucks. Deliver the fruit to the cannery. 40 boxes for $5. We can't do it. And the yellow fruit falls heavily to the ground and splashes on the ground. The yellow jackets dig into the soft meat, and there is a smell of ferment and rot. Then the grapes. We can't make good wine. People can't buy good wine. Rip the grapes from the vines. Good grapes. Rotten grapes. Wasp-stung grapes. Press stems. Press dirt and rot. But there's mildew and formic acid in the vats. Add sulfur and tannic acid. The smell from the ferment is not the rich odor of wine, but the smell of decay and chemicals. Oh, well, it has alcohol in it anyway. They can get drunk. The little farmers watch debt creep up on them like the tide. They sprayed the trees and sold no crop. They pruned and grafted and could not pick the crop. And the men of knowledge have worked, have considered, and the fruit is rotting on the ground, and the decaying mash in the wine vats is poisoning the air. And taste the wine. No grape flavor at all, just sulfur and tannic acid and alcohol. This little orchard will be a part of a great holding next year, for the debt will have choked the owner. This vineyard will belong to the bank. Only the great owners can survive, for they own the canneries too. And 4 pears, peeled and cut in half, cooked and canned, still cost 15 cents. And the canned pears do not spoil. They will last for years. The decay spreads over the state, and the sweet smell is a great sorrow on the land. Men who can graft the trees and make the seed fertile and big can find no way to let the hungry people eat their produce. Men who have created new fruits in the world cannot create a system whereby their fruits may be eaten, and the failure hangs over the state like a great sorrow. The works of the roots of the vines, of the trees, must be destroyed to keep up the price, and this is the saddest, bitterest thing of all. Carloads of oranges dumped on the ground. The people came for miles to take the fruit, but this could not be. How would they buy oranges at 20 cents a dozen if they could drive out and pick them up? And men with hoses squirt kerosene on the oranges, and they are angry at the crime, angry at the people who have come to take the fruit. 1 million people hungry, needing the fruit, and kerosene sprayed over the golden mountains. And the smell of rot fills the country. Burn coffee for fuel in the ships. Burn corn to keep warm. It makes a hot fire. Dump potatoes in the rivers and place guards along the banks to keep the hungry people from fishing them out. Slaughter the pigs and bury them, and let the putrescence drip down into the earth. There is a crime here that goes beyond denunciation. There is a sorrow here that weeping cannot symbolize. There is a failure here that topples all our success. The fertile earth, the straight tree rows, the sturdy trunks and the ripe fruit. And children dying of pellagra must die, because a profit cannot be taken from an orange. And coroners must fill in the certificates.
died of malnutrition because the food must rot, must be forced to rot. The people come with nets to fish for potatoes in the river, and the guards hold them back. They come in rattling cars to get the dumped oranges, but the kerosene is sprayed. And they stand still and watch the potatoes float by. Listen to the screaming pigs being killed in a ditch and covered with quicklime. Watch the mountains of oranges slop down to a putrefying ooze. And in the eyes of the people there is the failure. And in the eyes of the hungry there is a growing wrath. In the souls of the people, the grapes of wrath are filling and growing heavy for the vintage. Chapter 26. In the weed patch camp, on an evening when the long, barred clouds hung over the set sun and inflamed their edges, the Jode family lingered after their supper. Ma hesitated before she started to do the dishes. "We got to do something," she said, and she pointed at Winfield. "Look at him," she said. And when they stared at the little boy, "He's a jerkin' and a twistin' in his sleep. Look at his color." The members of the family looked at the earth again in shame. "Fried dough," Ma said. "1 month we been here, and Tom had 5 days' work, and the rest of you scrabbling out every day and no work, and scared to talk, and the money gone. You're scared to talk it out. Every night you just eat, and then you get wandering away. Can't bear to talk it out. Well, you got to. Rosa Sharn ain't far from due, and look at her color. You got to talk it out. Now don't none of you get up till we figure something out. 1 day more grease and 2 days flour and 10 potatoes. You set here and get busy." They looked at the ground. Pa cleaned his thick nails with his pocket knife. Uncle John picked at a splinter on the box he sat on. Tom pinched his lower lip and pulled it away from his teeth. He released his lip and said softly, "We been a-lookin', Ma. Been walkin' out since we can't use the gas no more. Been goin' in every gate, walkin' up to every house. Even when we knowed they wasn't gonna be nothin', puts a weight on you. Goin' out lookin' for somethin' you know you ain't gonna find." Ma said fiercely, "You ain't got the right to get discouraged. This here family's goin' under. You just ain't got the right." Pa inspected his scraped nail.
"We gotta go," he said. "We didn't want to go. It's nice here, and folks is nice here. We're feared we'll have to go live in one of them Hoovervilles.
Well, if we got to, we got to. First thing is, we got to eat."
Al broke in.
"I got a tank full of gas in the truck. I didn't let nobody get into that."
Tom smiled. "This here Al got a lot of sense along with these Randy Pandy."
"Now you figure," Ma said. "I ain't watching this here family starve no more. 1 day more grease, that's what we got. Come time for Rosa Sharn to lay in, she got to be fed up. You figure."
"This here hot water and toilets," Pa began.
"Well, we can't eat no toilets,"
Tom said. "They was a fella come by today looking for men to go to Marysville, picking fruit."
"Well, why don't we go to Marysville?" Ma demanded.
"I don't know," said Tom. "Didn't seem right, somehow. He was so anxious. Wouldn't say how much the pay was. Said he didn't know exactly."
Ma said, "We're a-goin' to Marysville. I don't care what the pay is, we're a-goin'."
"It's too far," said Tom. "We ain't got the money for gasoline. We couldn't get there. Ma, you say we gotta figure. I ain't done nothing but figure the whole time."
Uncle John said,
Feller says there's cotton a-coming in up north, near a place called Tulare. That ain't very far, feller says.
Well, we got to get going, and going quick. I ain't a-settin' here no longer, no matter how nice. Ma took up her bucket and walked toward the sanitary unit for hot water.
Ma gets tough, Tom said. I seen her getting mad quite a piece now. She just boils up.
Pa said with relief,
Well, she bring it into the open, anyways. I've been laying at night a-burning my brains up. Now we can talk her out, anyways.
Ma came back with her bucket of steaming water.
Well, she demanded, figure anything out?
Just working her over, said Tom. Now, suppose we just move up north where that cotton's at. We've been over this here country. We know they ain't nothing here. Suppose we pack up and shove north. Then when the cotton's ready, we'll be there. I kinda like to get my hands round some cotton. You got a full tank, Al?
Almost, about 2 inches down.
Should get us up to that place.
Ma poised a dish over the bucket.
Well?
She demanded. Tom said,
You win. We'll move on, I guess. Huh, Pa? Guess we got to, Pa said.
Ma glanced at him.
When?
Well, no need waiting. Might as well go in the morning.
We got to go in the morning. I told you what's left.
Now, Ma, don't think I don't want to go. I ain't had a good gutful to eat in 2 weeks. Of course, I filled up, but I didn't take no good from it.
Ma plunged the dish into the bucket.
We'll go in the morning, she said.
Pa sniffled.
Seems like times has changed, he said sarcastically. Time was when a man said what we'd do. Seems like women is telling now. Seems like it's pretty near time to get out a stick.
Ma put the clean, dripping tin dish out on a box. She smiled down at her work.
You get your stick, Pa, she said. Times when there's food and a place to sit, then maybe you can use your stick and keep your skin whole. But you ain't a-doing your job, either a-thinking or a-working. If you was, why, you could use your stick, and women folks would sniffle their nose and creep mouse around. But you just get you a stick now, and you ain't licking no woman. You're a-fightin', 'cause I got a stick all laid out, too.
Pa grinned with embarrassment.
Now, it ain't good to have the little fellows hear you talking like that, he said.
You get some bacon inside the little fellas for you come telling what else is good for 'em, said Ma.
Pa got up in disgust and moved away, and Uncle John followed him. Ma's hands were busy in the water, but she watched them go, and she said proudly to Tom,
He's all right. He ain't beat. He's like as not to take a smack at me.
Tom laughed.
You just a-treadin' him on?
Sure, said Ma. Take a man. He can get worried and worried, and it eats out his liver. And pretty soon he'll just lay down and die with his heart et out. But if you can take and make him mad, why, he'll be all right.
Pa, he didn't say nothing, but he's mad now. He'll show me now. He's all right.
Al got up. I'm going to walk down the row, he said.
Better see the trucks ready to go, Tom warned him.
She's ready.
If she ain't, I'll turn Ma on you.
She's ready.
Al strolled jauntily along the row of tents. Tom sighed.
I'm a-getting tired, Ma. How about making me mad?
You got more sense, Tom. I don't need to make you mad. I got to lean on you.
Them others, they're kind of strangers, all but you.
You won't give up, Tom.
The job fell on him.
I don't like it, he said. I want to go out like Al, and I want to get mad like Pa, and I want to get drunk like Uncle John.
Ma shook her head. You can't, Tom. I know. I knowed from the time you was a little fella. You can't. There's some folks that's just their self and nothing more. There's Al. He's just a young fella after girl. You wasn't never like that, Tom.
Sure I was, said Tom. Still am.
No, you ain't. Everything you do is more'n you. When they sent you up to prison, I knowed it. You're spoke for.
Now, Ma, cut it out. It ain't true. It's all in your head.
She stacked the knives and forks on top of the plates.
Maybe. Maybe it's in my head. Rosa Sharn, you wipe up these here and put 'em away.
The girl got breathlessly to her feet, and her swollen middle hung out in front of her. She moved sluggishly to the box and picked up a wash dish. Tom said,
"Getting so tightful it's a pulling her eyes wide."
"Don't you go a-jollying," said Ma. "She's doing good. You go along and say goodbye to anybody you want."
"Okay," he said. "I'm gonna see how far it is up there."
Ma said to the girl, "He ain't saying stuff like that to make you feel bad. Where's Ruthie and Winfield?"
"They snuck off after Pa. I seen 'em."
"Well, leave 'em go."
Rose of Sharon moved sluggishly about her work. Ma inspected her cautiously.
"You feeling pretty good? Your cheeks is kind of saggy." "I ain't had milk like they said I ought."
"I know. We just didn't have no milk."
Rose of Sharon said dully,
"If Connie hadn't went away, we'd have had a little house by now, with him studying and all. Would have got milk like I need. Would have had a nice baby. This here baby ain't gonna be no good. I ought to had milk."
She reached in her apron pocket and put something into her mouth. Ma said,
"I seen you nibbling on something. What you eatin'?" "Nothing."
"Come on. What you nibbling on?"
"Just a piece of slack lime. Found a big hunk."
"Why, that's just like eating dirt."
"I kind of feel like I want it."
Ma was silent. She spread her knees and tightened her skirt.
"I know," she said at last. "I ate coal once when I was in a family way. Ate a big piece of coal. Grandma says I shouldn't."
"Don't you say that about the baby. You got no right even to think it." "Got no husband. Got no milk."
Ma said, "If you was a well girl, I'd take a whang at you, right in the face."
She got up and went inside the tent. She came out and stood in front of Rose of Sharon, and she held out her hand.
"Look."
The small gold earrings were in her hand.
"These is for you."
The girl's eyes brightened for a moment, and then she looked aside.
"I ain't pierced."
"Well, I'm a-gonna pierce you."
Ma hurried back into the tent. She came back with a cardboard box. Hurriedly, she threaded a needle, doubled the thread, and tied a series of knots in it. She threaded a second needle and knotted the thread. In the box, she found a piece of cork.
"It'll hurt. It'll hurt."
Ma stepped to her, put the cork in back of the earlobe, and pushed the needle through the ear into the cork. The girl twitched.
"It sticks. It'll hurt."
"No more than that?"
"Yes, it will."
"Well, then, let's see the other ear first."
She placed the cork and pierced the other ear.
"It'll hurt."
"Hush," said Ma. "It's all done."
Rose of Sharon looked at her in wonder. Ma clipped the needles off and pulled one knot of each thread through the lobes.
"Now," she said, "every day we'll pull one knot, and in a couple weeks it'll be all well and you can wear 'em. Here, they're yourn now. You can keep 'em."
Rose of Sharon touched her ears tenderly and looked at the tiny spots of blood on her fingers.
"It didn't hurt. Just stuck a little."
"You ought to been pierced long ago," said Ma.
She looked at the girl's face, and she smiled in triumph.
"Now get them dishes all done up. Your baby gonna be a good baby. Very near let you have a baby without your ears was pierced. But you're safe now.
Does it mean something?
Why, course it does, said Ma. Course it does.
Al strolled down the street toward the dancing platform. Outside a neat little tent, he whistled softly and then moved along the street. He walked to the edge of the grounds and sat down in the grass. The clouds over the west had lost the red edging now, and the cores were black. Al scratched his legs and looked toward the evening sky. In a few moments, a blonde girl walked near. She was pretty and sharp-featured. She sat down in the grass beside him and did not speak. Al put his hand on her waist and walked his fingers around.
Don't, she said. You tickle.
We're going away tomorrow, said Al.
She looked at him, startled.
Tomorrow? Where?
Up north, he said lightly.
Well, we're going to get married, ain't we?
Sure, sometime.
You said pretty soon,
she cried angrily.
Well, soon is when soon comes.
You promised.
He walked his fingers around farther.
Get away, she cried. You said we was.
Well, sure we are.
And now you're going away,
Al demanded.
What's the matter with you? You in a family way?
No, I ain't,
Al laughed.
I just been wasting my time, huh?
Her chin shot out. She jumped to her feet.
You get away from me, Al Jode. I don't want to see you no more.
Oh, come on. What's the matter?
You think you're just hell on wheels.
Now, wait a minute.
You think I got to go out with you? Well, I don't. I got lots of chances.
Now, wait a minute.
No, sir. You get away.
Al lunged suddenly, caught her by the ankle, and tripped her. He grabbed her when she fell and held her and put his hand over her angry mouth. She tried to bite his palm, but he cupped it out over her mouth, and he held her down with his other arm. And in a moment she lay still, and in another moment they were giggling together in the dry grass.
"Well, we'll be a-comin' back pretty soon," said Al, "and I'll have a pocket full of Jack. We'll go down to Hollywood and see the pictures."
She was lying on her back. Al bent over her, and he saw the bright evening star reflected in her eyes, and he saw the black cloud reflected in her eyes.
"We'll go on the train," he said. "How long you think it'll be?"
she asked.
"Oh, maybe a month," he said.
The evening dark came down, and Pa and Uncle John squatted with the heads of the families out by the office. They studied the night and the future. The little manager in his white clothes, frayed and clean, rested his elbows on the porch rail. His face was drawn and tired. Houston looked up at him.
"You better get some sleep, mister."
"I guess I ought. Baby born last night in Unit 3. I'm getting to be a good midwife."
"Fella ought to know," said Houston. "Married fella got to know."
Pa said,
"We're a-getting out in the morning."
"Yep. Which way you going?"
"Thought we'd go up north a little. Try to get in the first cotton. We ain't had work. We're out of food."
"Know if they's any work?" Houston asked.
"No, but we're sure there ain't none here."
"They will be, a little later," Houston said. "We'll hold on."
"We hate to go," said Pa. "Folks been so nice here, and the toilets and all, but we gotta eat. Got a tank of gas that'll get us a little piece up the road. We had a bath every day here. Never was so clean in my life. Funny thing. Used to be I only got a bath every week, and I never seemed to stink. But now if I don't get one every day, I stink. Wonder if taking a bath so often makes that."
"Maybe you couldn't smell yourself before," the manager said.
"Maybe. I wish we could stay."
The little manager held his temples between his palms.
"I think there's going to be another baby tonight," he said.
We gonna have one in our family for long, said Pa. I wish we could have it here. I sure wish we could.
Tom and Willie and Jule the half-breed sat on the edge of the dance floor and swung their feet.
I got a sack of Durham, Jules said. Like a smoke?
I sure would, said Tom. Ain't had a smoke for a hell of a time. He rolled the brown cigarette carefully to keep down the loss of tobacco.
Well, sir, we'll be sorry to see you go, said Willie.
You folks is good folks. Tom lighted his cigarette. I've been thinking about it a lot. Jesus Christ, I wish we could settle down. Jule took back his Durham.
It ain't nice, he said. I got a little girl. Thought when I come out here, she'd get some schooling. But hell, we ain't in one place hardly long enough. Just gets going and we gotta drag on.
I hope we don't get in no more Hoovervilles, said Tom. I was really scared there.
Deputies push you around?
I was scared I'd kill somebody, said Tom. Was only there a little while, but I was a-stewing around the whole time. Deputy come in and picked up a friend just because he talked out of turn. I was just stewing all the time.
Ever been in a strike? Willie asked.
No.
Well, I've been a-thinking a lot. Why don't them deputies get in here and raise hell like every place else? Think that little guy in the office is a-stopping them?
No, sir.
Well, what is? Jule asked.
I'll tell you. It's 'cause we're all a-working together. Deputy can't pick on one fella in this camp. He's picking on the whole darn camp, and he don't dare. All we gotta do is give a yell and they's 200 men out. Fella organizing for the union was a-talking out on the road. He says we could do that any place. Just stick together. They ain't raising hell with no 200 men. They're picking on one man.
Yeah, said Jule. And suppose you got a union. You got to have leaders. They'll just pick up your leaders. And where's your union?
Well, said Willie, we got to figure out sometime. I've been out here a year, and wages is going right on down. Fella can't feed his family on his work now, and it's getting worse all the time. It ain't gonna do no good to sit around and starve. I don't know what to do. If a fella owns a team of horses, he don't raise no hell if he gotta feed 'em when they ain't working. But if a fella got men working for him, he just don't give a damn. Horses is a hell of a lot more worth than men. I don't understand it.
Get so I don't want to think about it, said Jule. And I got to think about it. I got this here little girl. You know how purty she is? One week, they give her a prize in this camp 'cause she's so purty. Well, what's gonna happen to her? She's getting spindly. I ain't gonna stand it. She's so purty. I'm gonna bust out.
How? Willie asked.
What you gonna do? Steal some stuff and get in jail? Kill somebody and get hung?
I don't know, said Jule. Gets me nuts thinking about it. Gets me clear nuts.
I'm a-gonna miss them dances, Tom said. Them was some of the nicest dances I ever seen. Well, I'm gonna turn in. So long. I'll be seeing you someplace.
He shook hands.
Sure will, said Jule.
Well, so long.
Tom moved away into the darkness. In the darkness of the Jode tent, Ruthie and Winfield lay on their mattress, and Ma laid beside them. Ruthie whispered,
Ma? Yeah? Ain't you asleep yet?
Ma, they gonna have croquet where we're going?
I don't know. Get some sleep. We want to get an early start.
Well, I wish we'd stay here where we're sure we got croquet.
Shh, said Ma.
Ma, Winfield hit a kid tonight.
He shouldn't have.
I know. I told him.
but he hit the kid right in the nose, and Jesus, how the blood run down. Don't talk like that. It ain't a nice way to talk. Winfield turned over. That kid says we was Okies, he said in an outraged voice. He says he wasn't no Okie 'cause he come from Oregon. Says we was goddamn Okies. I socked him.
Shh, you shouldn't. He can't hurt you calling names.
Well, I won't let him, Winfield said fiercely.
Shh, get some sleep.
Ruthie said, you ought to seen the blood run down all over his clothes. Ma reached a hand from under the blanket and snapped Ruthie on the cheek with her finger. The little girl went rigid for a moment and then dissolved into sniffling, quiet crying. In the sanitary unit, Pa and Uncle John sat in adjoining compartments.
Might as well get in a good last one, said Pa. It's sure nice. Remember how the little fellows was so scared when they flushed them the first time? I wasn't so easy myself, said Uncle John.
He pulled his overalls neatly up around his knees.
I'm getting bad, he said. I feel sin. You can't sin none, said Pa. You ain't got no money. Just sit tight. Cost you at least $2 to sin, and we ain't got $2 amongst us.
Yeah, but I'm a-thinking sin.
All right, you can think sin for nothing. It's just as bad, said Uncle John. It's a whole hell of a lot cheaper, said Pa. Don't you go making light of sin. I ain't. You just go ahead. You always get sinful just when hell's a-popping.
I know it, said Uncle John. Always was that way. I never told half the stuff I done.
Well, keep it to yourself.
These here nice toilets gets me sinful.
Go out in the bushes, then. Come on, pull up your pants and let's get some sleep.
Pa pulled his overall straps in place and snapped the buckle. He flushed the toilet and watched thoughtfully while the water whirled in the bowl. It was still dark when Ma roused her camp. The low night lights shone through the open doors of the sanitary units. From the tents along the road came the assorted snores of the campers. Ma said, "Come on, roll out. We got to be on our way. Day's not far off." She raised the screechy shade of the lantern and lighted the wick. "Come on, all of you." The floor of the tent squirmed into slow action. Blankets and comforts were thrown back, and sleepy eyes squinted blindly at the light. Ma slipped on her dress over the underclothes she wore to bed. "We got no coffee," she said. "I got a few biscuits. We can eat 'em on the road. Just get up now, and we'll load the truck. Come on now. Don't make no noise. Don't want to wake the neighbors." It was a few moments before they were fully aroused. "Now don't you get away," Ma warned the children. The family dressed. The men pulled down the tarpaulin and loaded up the truck. "Make it nice and flat," Ma warned them. They piled the mattress on top of the load and bound the tarpaulin in place over its ridgepole.
"All right, Ma," said Tom. "She's ready."
Ma held a plate of cold biscuits in her hand. "All right, here. Each take one. That's all we got." Ruthie and Winfield grabbed their biscuits and climbed up on the load. They covered themselves with a blanket and went back to sleep, still holding the cold, hard biscuits in their hands. Tom got into the driver's seat and stepped on the starter. It buzzed a little and then stopped.
"God damn you, Al," Tom cried. "You let the battery run down."
Al blustered.
"How the hell was I gonna keep her up if I ain't got gas to run her?"
Tom chuckled suddenly.
"Well, I don't know how, but it's your fault. You got a cranker."
"I tell you, it ain't my fault."
Tom got out and found the crank under the seat.
"It's my fault," he said.
"Give me that crank."
Al seized it.
"Pull down the spark so she don't take my arm off."
"Okay. Twist her tail."
Al labored at the crank around and around. The engine caught, spluttered, and roared as Tom choked the car delicately. He raised the spark and reduced the throttle. Ma climbed in beside him.
"We woke up everybody in the camp," she said. "They'll go to sleep again."
Al climbed in on the other side.
"Pa and Uncle John got up top," he said, "going to sleep again."
Tom drove toward the main gate. The watchman came out of the office and played his flashlight on the truck.
"Wait a minute."
"What you want?"
"You checking out?"
"Sure."
"Well, I got to cross you off."
"Okay."
"Know which way you're going?"
"Well, we're gonna try up north."
"Well, good luck," said the watchman.
"Same to you. So long."
The truck edged slowly over the big hump and into the road. Tom retraced the road he had driven before, past Weed Patch and west until he came to 99, then north on the great paved road toward Bakersfield. It was growing light when he came into the outskirts of the city. Tom said,
"Every place you look is restaurants, and them places all got coffee. Look at that all-nighter there. Bet they got 10 gallons of coffee in there, all hot."
"Oh, shut up," said Al.
Tom grinned over at him.
"Well, I see you got yourself a girl right off."
"Well, what of it?"
"He's mean this morning, Ma. He ain't good company,"
Al said irritably.
"I'm going out of my own pretty soon. Fella can make his way a lot easier if he ain't got a family."
Tom said,
"You'd have yourself a family in 9 months. I seen you playing around."
"You crazy," said Al. "I'd get myself a job in a garage and I'd eat in restaurants."
"And you'd have a wife and kid in 9 months."
"I tell you I wouldn't."
Tom said,
"You're a wise guy, Al. You gonna take some beating over the head."
"Who's gonna do it?"
"They'll always be guys to do it," said Tom.
"You think just because you..."
"Now you just stop that," Ma broke in.
"I done it," said Tom. "I was a badgering him. I didn't mean no harm, Al. I didn't know you liked that girl so much."
"I don't like no girls much."
"All right, then you don't. You ain't gonna get no argument out of me."
The truck came to the edge of the city.
"Look at them hot dog stands. Hundreds of them," said Tom.
Ma said,
"Tom, I got a dollar put away. You want coffee bad enough to spend it?"
"No, Ma. I'm just fooling."
"You can have it if you want it bad enough."
"I wouldn't take it," Al said.
"Then shut up about coffee."
Tom was silent for a time.
"Seems like I got my foot in it all the time," he said. "There's the road we run up that night."
"I hope we don't never have nothing like that again," said Ma. "That was a bad night."
"I didn't like it none either."
The sun rose on their right, and the great shadow of the truck ran beside them, flicking over the fence posts beside the road. They ran on past the rebuilt Hooverville.
"Look," said Tom, "they got new people there. Looks like the same place."
Al came slowly out of his sullenness.
"Fella told me some of them people been burned out 15-20 times. Says they just go hide down the willows, and then they come out and build them another weed shack, just like gophers. Got so used to it, they don't even get mad no more, this fella says. They just figure it's like bad weather."
"Sure was bad weather for me that night," said Tom.
They moved up the wide highway, and the sun's warmth made them shiver.
"Getting snappy in the morning," said Tom. "Winter's on the way. I just hope we can get some money before it comes. Tent ain't gonna be nice in the winter."
Ma sighed, and then she straightened her head.
"Tom," she said, "we gotta have a house in the winter. I tell you, we got to. Ruthie's all right, but Winfield ain't so strong. We got to have a house when the rains come. I heard it just rains cats around here. We'll get a house, Ma. You rest easy. You gonna have a house. Just so's it's got a roof and a floor, just to keep the little fellas off in the ground. We'll try, Ma. I don't want to worry you now. We'll try, Ma. I just get panicky sometimes, she said. I just lose my spunk.
I never seen you when you lost it.
Nights I do, sometimes. There came a harsh hissing from the front of the truck. Tom grabbed the wheel tight, and he thrust the brake down to the floor. The truck bumped to a stop. Tom sighed.
Well, there she is.
He leaned back in the seat. Al leaped out and ran to the right front tire. Great big nail, he called.
We got any tire patch?
No, said Al. Used it all up. Got patch, but no glue stuff. Tom turned and smiled sadly at Ma.
You shouldn't have told about that dollar, he said. We'd have fixed her some way.
He got out of the car and went to the flat tire. Al pointed to the big nail protruding from the flat casing.
There she is. If they's one nail in the county, we run over it.
Is it bad? Ma called.
No, not bad, but we gotta fix her.
The family piled down from the top of the truck.
Puncture?
Pa asked, and then he saw the tire and was silent. Tom moved Ma from the seat and got the can of tire patch from underneath the cushion. He unrolled the rubber patch and took out the tube of cement, squeezed it gently.
She's almost dry, he said. Maybe there's enough. All right, Al, block the back wheels. Let's get her jacked up.
Tom and Al worked well together. They put stones behind the wheels, put the jack under the front axle, and lifted the weight off the limp casing. They ripped off the casing. They found the hole, dipped a rag in the gas tank, and washed the tube around the hole. And then, while Al held the tube tight over his knee, Tom tore the cement tube in two and spread the little fluid thinly on the rubber with his pocket knife. He scraped the gum delicately.
Now let her dry while I cut a patch.
He trimmed and beveled the edge of the blue patch. Al held the tube tight while Tom put the patch tenderly in place.
There. Now, bring her to the running board while I tap her with a hammer.
He pounded the patch carefully, then stretched the tube and watched the edges of the patch.
There she is. She's gonna hold. Stick her on the rim and we'll pump her up. Looks like you keep your buck, Ma.
Al said,
I wish we had a spare. We gotta get us a spare, Tom, on a rim and all pumped up. Then we can fix a puncture at night.
When we get money for a spare, we'll get us some coffee and side meat instead, Tom said. The light morning traffic buzzed by on the highway, and the sun grew warm and bright. A wind, gentle and sighing, blew in puffs from the southwest, and the mountains on both sides of the great valley were indistinct in a pearly mist. Tom was pumping at the tire when a roadster coming from the north stopped on the other side of the road. A brown-faced man dressed in a light gray business suit got out and walked across to the truck. He was bareheaded. He smiled, and his teeth were very white against his brown skin. He wore a massive gold wedding ring on the third finger of his left hand. A little gold football hung on a slender chain across his vest.
Morning, he said pleasantly.
Tom stopped pumping and looked up.
Morning.
The man ran his fingers through his coarse, short, graying hair.
You people looking for work?
We sure are, mister. Looking even under boards.
Can you pick peaches?
We never done it, Pa said. We can do anything, Tom said hurriedly. We can pick anything there is.
The man fingered his gold football.
Well, there's plenty of work for you about 40 miles north.
We'd sure admire to get it, said Tom. You tell us how to get there and we'll go eloping.
Well, you go north to Pixley, that's 35 or 6 miles, and you turn east, go about 6 miles, ask anybody where the Hooper Ranch is. You'll find plenty of work there.
We sure will.
Know where there's other people looking for work?
Sure, said Tom. Down at the Weed Patch Camp, there's plenty looking for work.
I'll take a run down there. We can use quite a few. Remember now, turn east at Pixley and keep straight east to the Hooper Ranch.
Sure, said Tom. And we thank you, mister. We need work awful bad.
All right, get along as soon as you can. He walked back across the road, climbed into his open roadster, and drove away south.
Tom threw his weight on the pump.
20 apiece, he called. 1, 2, 3, 4.
At 20, Al took the pump, and then Pa, and then Uncle John. The tire filled out and grew plump and smooth. 3 times around the pump went.
Let her down and let's see, said Tom.
Al released the jack and lowered the car.
Got plenty, he said. Maybe a little too much.
They threw the tools into the car.
Come on, let's go, Tom called. We're gonna get some work at last.
Ma got in the middle again. Al drove this time.
Now take her easy. Don't burn her up, Al.
They drove on through the sunny morning fields. The mist lifted from the hilltops and they were clear and brown with black-purple creases. The wild doves flew up from the fences as the truck passed. Al unconsciously increased his speed.
Easy, Tom warned him. She'll blow up if you crowd her. We got to get there. Might even get in some work today.
Ma said excitedly,
With 4 men a-workin', maybe I can get some credit right off. First thing I'll get is coffee, 'cause you've been wantin' that, and then some flour and bacon powder and some meat. Better not get no side meat right off. Save that for later, maybe Saturday. And soap. Got to get soap. Wonder where we'll stay, she babbled on. And milk. I'll get some milk, 'cause Rosa Sharn, she ought to have milk. The lady nurse says that.
A snake wriggled across the warm highway. Al zipped over and ran it down and came back to his own lane.
Gopher snake, said Tom. You oughtn't have done that.
I hate 'em, said Al gaily. Hate all kinds. Give me the stomach quake.
The forenoon traffic on the highway increased. Salesmen in shiny coupes with the insignia of their companies painted on the doors, red and white gasoline trucks dragging clinking chains behind them, great square-doored vans from wholesale grocery houses delivering produce. The country was rich along the roadside. There were orchards heavy-leafed in their prime, and vineyards with the long green crawlers carpeting the ground between the rows. There were melon patches and grain fields. White houses stood in the greenery, roses growing over them, and the sun was gold and warm. In the front seat of the truck, Ma and Tom and Al were overcome with happiness.
I ain't really felt so good for a long time, Ma said. If we pick plenty peaches, we might get a house, pay rent even for a couple months. We got to have a house.
Al said, I'm a-gonna save up. I'll save up, and then I'm a-goin' into town and get me a job in a garage. Live in a room and eat in restaurants. Go to the moving pictures every damn night. Don't cost much. Cowboy pictures.
His hands tightened on the wheel. The radiator bubbled and hissed steam.
Did you fill her up? Tom asked.
Yeah, wind's kind of behind us. That's what makes her boil.
It's an awful nice day, Tom said. Used to work there in McAllister and think all the things I'd do. I'd go in a straight line way to hell and gone and never stop nowheres. Seems like a long time ago. Seems like it's years ago I was in. They was a guard made it tough. I was gonna lay for him.
Guess that's what makes me mad at cops. Seems like every cop got his face. He used to get red in the face, looked like a pig. Had a brother out west, they said. Used to get